Damien Carrick now with the Law Report.
How New South Wales prisons have transformed since the violence of the 1970s. It's 26 years since the release of the Nagel Royal Commission report exposed violence inside a number of New South Wales prisons. And last week in the New South Wales Parliament House, a seminar was held to commemorate that event and the reforms enacted as a direct result. Back in 1976, the New South Wales government invited Mr Justice Nagel to head a royal commission into the state's prisons. His report blew the lid on a culture of institutionalised violence against prisoners in some jails and ushered in a period of energetic reform. Today we're going to hear from the man who implemented the changes demanded by the Nagel report, Tony Vinson, a former prisoner turned activist, and also from prison expert Professor David Brown, about the conditions which led to the Royal Commission and how far the system has moved on since then. David Brown says the Royal Commission helped end the violence against prisoners which existed in some jails.
Well, a good example was the systematic flogging of all prisoners in the Bathurst jail in October 1970. That was actually led by the then Superintendent Pallett, and prison officers went round cells systematically, one at a time, down wings in cell blocks, four or five or six of them bursting into cells and flogging prisoners with batons. And prisoners could hear the mayhem, the screams, the shouts on the way around the prison as they waited for their turn. So that was a bit of an indication of the kind of immunity, I suppose, enjoyed by the regime, by prison officers, and the reliance on physical systematic violence as a standard practice. The other example of that, I suppose, was the so-called reception biff regime at Grafton Jail, which had been set up in 1943 and ran right through until the eve of the Royal Commission in 1976. And that involved, again, floggings of prisoners who were seen as being troublemakers in other jails, who had then been transferred to Grafton, and on arrival at that jail they were handcuffed. They were then flogged to the ground by large burly officers, in many cases sustaining very serious injuries, and thereafter were flogged quite regularly and intermittently during their stay in that jail. That reliance on physical brutality is perhaps the best indicator of what the system was like at that particular time in the 1970s.
I was battered many times. I was moved as an intractable into Grafton Jail, and then I was battered really badly, and so they tried to terrorise me. At times I lay on the floor of the cell concerned that what they said would happen, which would be that they intend to kill me. And in the middle of the night they would constantly walk past my cell door and kick the door. So what they were doing was actually breaking people. And I was just making sure that there was a sense of fear amongst the people in there. So there was torture. It was terrorism on a state level. So, you know, I was most concerned. It took me years and years to get over the experience of being in jail.
Brett Collins, an activist with Justice Action, a criminal justice advocacy group. A convicted bank robber, Collins spent 10 years in New South Wales jails between 1971 and 1980. David Brown says prison conditions like those, not surprisingly, inflamed a sense of grievance amongst prisoners.
Then there was a really major riot in Bathurst Jail again in February of 1974, where half the jail was burnt to the ground. After that riot had been put down, prisoners were locked into yards, and then as they were released, they had to run a gauntlet where further bashings took place, and they were then taken off to other jails. So the roots of the Nagel report, really, although it wasn't actually announced until 1976, actually lay in a combination of the 1970 bashings, the 1974 riot, and the constant stalling and prevarication on the part of the department and the government denying that these events had taken place.
Following the handing down of the Nagel report, Tony Vinson was appointed in 1979 as chair of the New South Wales Corrective Services Commission. David Brown says Vinson implemented a raft of reforms aimed at ending the violence and giving prisoners meaningful rights.
Previous to that, internal disciplinary charges could be brought by prison officers or prison administrators against individual prisoners. They were heard by what were called visiting justices, who were magistrates from outside and came in to hear those charges. Those courts were openly acknowledged to be kangaroo courts. The findings were often made quite independently of the evidence. Prisoners were sometimes assaulted in front of the magistrates. There was no right to legal representation. They were a farce, basically. And Nagel helped end that farce after that legal representation was introduced into those hearings. And so that in some senses, the jail was kind of legalised. The unlawful physical violence and brutality as a form of control was phased out, and the sense of prisoners as subjects possessing certain legal rights and so on was introduced.
While immediately following the Nagel Royal Commission, prison reform was widely popular, but over time, support eroded. Tony Vinson only lasted in the job about 3 years. David Brown again.
Vincent was forced out after a relatively short period of time, after the kind of political momentum changed. There was a strong counter-attack by elements of the media, especially the Daily Telegraph, trying to play up the very dangerous status of the prisoners in Katingal. The Prison Officers Union, in many cases, was very resistant to some of the changes in the reform. There was a resistance to the idea that inmates could have any say through inmate committees and so on. And eventually the government, in a sense, started to backtrack away from reform as the kind of political media tide started to turn against prisoners after the initial wave of support following the revelations of the Royal Commission report itself.
Looking back, Tony Vincent says his greatest achievement during his time as chair of the New South Wales Corrective Services Commission, 1979 to 1981, was stamping out violence by prison authorities.
A great deal of energy was expended driving home to all staff in the system that there was to be no more of that, and more inquiries were instituted to deal legally with those who continued to infringe that principle and indeed the law, until I think it could fairly be claimed that the extraordinary brutality of the past was expunged from the system, at least at the level of officer upon prisoner.
What weren't you able to achieve?
Well, we weren't able to achieve anywhere near as much as Nagel had recommended, and certainly as much as I desired, in the realm of finding alternative forms of punishment for prison. We did introduce community service orders. We diverted young prisoners away from the maximum security reception prisons and so on. But a number of very concrete proposals that were put forward, including one that I'd love to see revived today, and that was that in all cases, or most cases, prisoners would serve part of their sentence under supervision in the community, not as a parole arrangement, but as a standard part of the prison sentence. We weren't able to develop the probation hostels that might have afforded that measure of stringent control that the courts would require to match the offences, but without using what I now consider, and considered at the time, toxic institutions like prisons. I think that was the most frustrating part of it. It wasn't for want of trying and bringing forward proposals, but we weren't allowed to implement them.
And indeed your successors haven't been able to implement them either.
Not to any great extent. Indeed, just recently, the Upper House in New South Wales had an inquiry into the ever-escalating size of the prison population. And with a colleague, Dr. Eileen Baldry, we put forward a very carefully prepared submission indicating the numbers of people who could, according to their records and the scale of their crime, have been dealt with in some other way. But there still isn't anything like what I would regard as adequate interest in finding those alternatives. Indeed, when I was in charge 25 years ago, we talked the size of the prison population down by simply making the community more aware of what prisons were about, that they offered only punishment and isolation and nothing else, not to think of them as centres of rehabilitation and so on, which I've not found them to be. We talked it down to about 3,500, and here we are 25 years later, all up, including periodic detainees. We've got a population of 9,000 in New South Wales.
Professor David Brown shares Vincent's dismay about the jump in prisoner numbers over the past 25 years.
The prison population has doubled. For women prisoners, it's tripled. For the proportion of Indigenous prisoners has increased threefold. They comprise 7% of the New South Wales prison population in 1976. They're 20% now and were in 2003. So there's been a massive increase in the number of prisoners, contrary to Nagel's expectation, and particularly Indigenous prisoners.
So post the Nagel report, presumably prisons are a much safer place.
one of the terms the prisoners use, they say that blue-on-green violence, they mean officer-on-prisoner, has been replaced by green-on-green, they mean prisoner-on-prisoner. And in particular jails like Goulburn Jail, for example, there's been quite significant violence between different racial and ethnic groupings, and that has been, I think, accelerated by administration practice of grouping prisoners on racial and ethnic lines. So that's a really major worry, I think, within the system.
David Brown from the University of New South Wales, who says that in most jails, prisoners tend to gravitate into ethnically based groups. But he says the division of prisoners along racial lines is more formal at Goulburn Maximum Security Prison. It's a policy implemented by prison authorities for security reasons and to allow prisoners to mix with those with whom they share language, cultural and recreational interests and preferred foods. It's a policy that Brown says has both positive and negative consequences. But Brett Collins takes a harder line. He says dividing prisoners along ethnic lines serves to increase racial tension and erode any sense of prisoner solidarity. Back in the 1970s and 80s, filmmaker David Goldie made a series of extraordinary documentaries about life inside prisons. They were called The Big House. Never before or since has a filmmaker had such access to Australian prisons. Goldie's interviews with prisoners reveal starkly the violence, the boredom and the squalid conditions experienced by prisoners during this period.
It's supposed to be motel conditions. How are they motel conditions when you wake up once a week and there's sewage floating around? What motel has sewage floating down the hallway? What motel would lock people in there for 18 hours a day? And I'd like for the people outside to go and lock themselves in the bathroom overnight. They can take the television set in there if they want. They can take a bottle of wine. But they won't like it. And I'd like them to see if they could perceive doing that day in, day out for 9 years, 8 years, 5 years. They won't be able to do it for a week.
Since the Nagel report, there's been a major prison building program, a development that Professor Brown applauds.
Particularly in some of the newer jails, certainly the physical conditions are better than they were then. And in those days, there were still some cell blocks, say, for example, in Goulburn and in Bathurst that were unsewered. People still had to slop out. I think certainly conditions have improved in terms of some medical health services and access to those. On the other hand, prisoners' legal status has been going backwards really in some areas. Nagel recommended they get the right to vote. In New South Wales, anyone serving more than 12 months doesn't get the right to vote in state elections. Prison watchdogs have recently been curtailed, so the Inspector General of Prisons has been abolished. Prison litigation has tailed off. Courts tend to defer to the expertise of correctional administrators. As a result of that, there's been significant overcrowding. Currently, the New South Wales prison system runs at over 100% occupancy, which is clearly overcrowded.
So what would you say is the biggest change in the last 25 years?
Probably the biggest change, really, in the prisons over that is the impact of drugs. If we look at the Nagel report, we find that there are only 6 entries in the index in the Nagel report on drugs. A recent Legislative Council report in New South Wales put the figure of prisoners with a history of drug use at 60% of males and 70% of females, so that drug use, dealing and attempts at regulation have really significantly affected prison life and culture in all sorts of ways. For example, in the violent enforcement of drug debts incurred in prison, in informing, in breaking down solidarities and oppositional cultures, and in the administration. Drugs are now the major official justification for a battery of new technological identification and surveillance devices, urine testing, dog squads, strip searching, cell ramps, lockdowns, harassment of visitors, and increases in the powers of search outside the confines of the prison.
Former prisoner turned prison activist Brett Collins says the drug epidemic of recent years has corroded life in prisons.
Inside jail in New South Wales, over 60% of women prisoners inside jail actually have hepatitis C and rising, and there's no way of preventing people from actually continuing to contract it.
And presumably that's tied to rampant drug use inside the prisons.
Of course, and drug use, of course, it talks about morale, it talks about no attempt at all to combat the drug problem that actually is the cause of most people in jail.
Prison activist Brett Collins. Just recently, the New South Wales Premier announced plans to create Australia's first compulsory drug treatment correctional centre for repeat male drug offenders. According to the New South Wales Department of Corrective Services, 70 to 80% of offenders are now serving sentences for drug-related offences. We did approach the department, but they declined to be interviewed for this program. These days, Tony Vinson is an emeritus professor at the University of New South Wales. Next week, he's releasing a report which pinpoints the markers of poverty in Australia. There's an interesting criminal justice twist to this research.
Yes, I've done this sort of thing before, but this time looked at another aspect, and that is just where you find the high volumes of particular forms of disadvantage and social problems in Victoria and New South Wales. And although I'd long suspected that, in fact, that big increase in the prison population has been attained not by a wider spread or wider catchment area, but by more intensive mining of the same areas that yielded a much smaller number 25 years ago, I think there's evidence for that in the fact that 25% of Victoria's admissions to prison in a year will be drawn from 2.1% of the postcodes of Victoria. And in New South Wales, it's not much more. It's about 3.1%. So the question that follows is, why wouldn't a society that's paying upwards of $65,000 a year to hold people in prison, but also from a values cost point of view, almost distorting thereafter people's lives and the lives of their children and families, why wouldn't we be putting much more emphasis on prevention upstream from the whole business of people becoming involved in juvenile justice and then going on to the adult sphere?
And those postcodes presumably were pretty low down on the socioeconomic stats.
Oh yes, yes, and in fact one of the defining characteristics of multiply disadvantaged areas, both in Victoria and New South Wales, is, of course, getting into trouble with the law.
I'm Damien Carrick, and you're listening to The Law Report on ABC Radio National.